even in the dark times, I mean, if I showed any moment of like, we're not going to do this, like every member would have probably fallen out with me. So mm-hmm. it was my job to, and my purpose per se, was to just every single day, bring that positivity, bring that optimistic. Everyone's going to see this succession with me, no matter what.
Hello and welcome. For the returning listener, thank you for supporting the I Will Not Quit podcast each and every week. For our newcomers, this is I Will Not Quit, a podcast starring people who have faced challenges in their lives and persevered. Today, my guest is Hunter Stahl. He and I helped found a fraternity on the campus of Central Michigan University a few years back. He is a leader, a brother, and someone who you can trust to have your back. Since graduating, Hunter and I picked up the love of running on our own timelines. We've encouraged each other from afar as we continue with our own day-to-day activities. Luckily, we were able to find some time to sit together over Zoom to discuss what makes strong leaders, how to form strong teams, and how to take the next step after a failure. That and much more. But today, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 5 of I Will Not Quit with Hunter Stahl. How is it going, man? It's good to see your face.
Good to see you too, Connor. I'm glad to be here.
Get your shades on, man. You're looking like things are a little bit sunnier and a little bit warmer where you are.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas, there's a little cold front now, but I mean, yeah.
What's a cold front in Texas?
Cold front in Texas is 80 degrees, and that's not even a cold front. But I'm used to the 95. I mean, all summer it was like a 9,500 degrees. So.
Yeah, man, that's a consistency that we've had during the summer in Michigan. So you're in Dallas, Texas. When did you mm-hmm. move to Dallas, Texas?
About, let's see, 5 months after graduating, because I had a 3-month internship. So,
and then okay. And I guess, so it, into that is to get there, to get to Dallas, why don't you kind of give intro people, Hunter, just give people kind of like a brief, you know, couple sentences about who you are and what's up, what's new with you, what are you doing?
All right. So, graduated CMU 2018.
What's your full name, sir?
Hunter. My name is Hunter Stahl. Graduated CMU 2018. Went into health administration. Worked at a hospital for about 3 months. Just wasn't for me. The pacing was not what I expected. But I did enjoy like the premise of helping people in general and communicating with people, mm-hmm. which kind of led me to a career in sales, which I'm doing now. So that is in what turn led me to. I wasn't expecting Dallas, Texas at all. I just was looking for a sales career.
You're just looking for a job.
Yeah, looking for a job. I wanted to actually move out of state because I felt like I needed to do something like that. Just to push the boundaries, meet new people. That was the big goal of it, meet new people in general. So yeah, just applied everywhere I could. Took about 2 months to actually lock in a job, and that job happened to be Gartner. And here we are in Dallas. Their headquarters is in Connecticut, but they had this brand new campus they were inviting a bunch of people to. And I was one of those people that got moved to the Dallas campus.
Right on. And when it came to this specific job, so were you looking at any job or were like, what's your technical like degree path? Like, what did you go into and how does it correlate to what you do now?
Yeah, mine was really unorthodox. Went into health administration. I was in the period where I picked too late to what I wanted to major in. So I was already kind of invested in health administration and marketing. And it was a good career and I had good classmates. So I had to finish it out. Didn't want to overstay my like 6-year tenure at CMU. I just wanted to be that 4 to 5 year range. And then just after that, like, getting my first taste in the hospital setting was great, but I wanted a better pacing job. I wanted something that I can communicate with more people. People that are my age is like the big gear towards like sales and just communication in general. With sales, when you go into a career in sales, you'll notice immediately all the people that either have just gotten out of college and the people that are tenured. And now I fall into the people that are tenured in sales. So
okay,
I
enjoy yeah. it.
And I think it's like, yeah, this is what I wanted to do in terms of communicating. But so we're all options are open.
Well, I like hearing that going into your career, you
were, I guess, in a word, unorthodox, because I think we get a lot of messaging from, whether it's our parents or just even at CMU in general, where, you know, everything just has some type of cookie cutter plan, that there's something
exactly where,
you know, you send yourself out in one direction and somehow it'll manifest a destiny or a path of being able to just create like a better life for yourself. Like, it's sometimes laid out to us in a sense that whatever path we choose, that at some point along the way, it'll just kind of like, it's a predestined thing. I mean, for you, you are a culmination of things that kind of happened without any planning whatsoever. Things really did present themselves in your life, and you really chose to say yes to many of those opportunities. So, I mean, look, the reason that we know each other is because we were a part of a fraternity together. And not only that, but we are founding fathers of a fraternity. And you happen to be kind of the head honcho. You happen to be the guy that spearheaded that effort.
Looking back, at first I rejected the idea of that fraternity.
You want to like walk people through, like, so for context, so going into this side of things, Hunter was presented the opportunity to be a part of the Phi Delta Theta organization. It's a fraternity. It's one of the largest fraternities in the nation. And it happens to it in 2014 or 2015 that they asked you to?
I believe it was 2014.
It was 2014.
Towards the end of that. So then it headed into 2015 and then, yep, the initiation.
So in 2014, Hunter was presented a situation where he was approached by Phi Delta Theta. So do you want to kind of walk us through just kind of how you became the president of a fraternity?
Ooh, okay. Let's go back here. Normal day. I believe it was, I remember the day too, Wednesday. Just walking through the UC and just, you know how all the recruiters are at like each like campus station.
Yeah, they're like in a bubble. They're like waiting for you.
Trying to get everyone to join the organization. And so happens had to be BJ and Danny DuBois were our recruiters for Phi Delta Theta that recruited all of us. And they just happened to call me in for a conversation. We talked for a good 30, 45 minutes. And honestly, I was not paying attention to what they said. I just was kind of roped into this conversation. It was interesting. They're very good speakers and they were very like just enticing to what they had to offer. They were good at presenting that. So, and I gave them a chance and just talked. Really, they gave me the flyers. You should come back. But really just didn't give the full attention that of like maybe coming back. So then had to like take it all in that night. So went home that night and I just felt like something was off or something. I should have taken that opportunity. So, and it just like, I was up all night deciding like, should I go back? Should I not? There was just something like in me or something like that was telling me you need to go back.
And you had this gut feeling.
The gut feeling. And at that time too, I was involved with the intramurals and like other like basic like college community stuff, but I was never part of like an organization that like
right.
was on the intramural and all that.
And really it's intimidating being a part of it.
Yeah. It was
being approached by an organization or something when you're young on campus, or in this case, you know, you might've been young, but you might've at least been a little bit indoctrinated with how organizations kind of run on college campuses, which is they're hundreds and hundreds of opportunities for students. So kind of they come at a dime a dozen kind of deal. Like, you know, there's an organization right. for everybody type of thing. Mm-hmm. So then
and
this one,
the stereotypes ish, like if you will, like of like all these organizations, how they play out, but
right.
This was new.
So this one presents itself. And so you think about it overnight. You're like, what's going on? And so you kind of you woke up the next day and you had your answer.
Yeah, I actually called. So I was up until 4:30 in the morning, and I texted Danny, set up a meeting for tomorrow morning, and he did. And I interviewed for it was potentially I wanted it. I always like envisioned being president. I never like thought I was going to be it, but I was like, well, if it's new, why not try out for the best? Like, why not like see myself in the best position? Like, at least in my mind, going into that, I'm like, I want to try to be the best at something that could be. So it was either going to be president, vice president, or intramural chair because I liked sports at that time. So it was down to those three, and just like talk to them about like what I like saw going into it and like what I wanted to get out of it. And just over time, like it was just a decision they made. Really didn't, looking back, they told me like, we just saw something different about you. It was just like all, it came down to that. So
when we talk about good leaders or good leadership, with respect to Phi Delta Theta, the leadership has always been pretty empowering, very, very little in terms of belittling. A lot of times there are organizations out there that potentially might belittle someone into just being a follower of the organization. But even as somebody who was a general member and had some experience in leadership roles in the fraternity, it was so empowering. And I think there's probably a lot of fraternities out there that, if not most opportunities in a fraternity, they'll say, yeah, this is super empowering. But each individual in Phi Delta Theta really played his part. And it really wasn't just a machine. It was kind of just an assembly of like really ridiculously cunning individuals. And to your point, you said, you know, it just felt right on both ends. Is, you know, we really, across the board during the 2 to 3 years that we really had, that was really intertwined between each other in this fraternity, you know, this level of intuition really drove the choices and decisions that we made as a fraternity across the board. Because, you know, you get into the presidency, you get into, or at least you get into founding this colony on campus over the, like, around 2 years. It took, right, to about, you know, get
about people, get the numbers. Yeah.
You know, did you always see this thing being a success? Like if you just put your time and effort into this, you know, little baby of yours, you know, it, you know, the sky's the limit? Or did you really see this thing kind of failing very early on, and you just, you know, were you going to let that, you know, kind of have that feeling sit with you lying down? Like, in the scope of this conversation, you went from like what, 40 something members down to like, you cut it in half in the span of 1 year?
About 50 to like 30 in like that fallout period. And then we got those 10 for recruitment, which was the perfect number.
And I was part of those. That was part of that 10.
Yeah. You were part of that 10. Yeah.
And from there, that December, I remember the picture being taken that December in 2016, where we took a picture as a group for the first time, really, where we had this official photo, and it made it so special because
we're real.
Yeah, it was super real. And for you, that was a transition of leadership for you then, wasn't it?
Oh man. Yeah. Just the amount of emotion and the amount of like, and bringing back to the point of like, did I ever see this failing? I think what my greatest strength in beginning that, and just because I was such a young leader, I was so just young into that whole like leadership premise. I was so like willing to take in everything. I wanted to learn from, and I couldn't have done it without like the core people around me, John, Adam, Marcus, Will, like every single person on that e-board really just like was my mentor in that presidency, just really helping me engage with everyone. Cause I wasn't the best like going into that. I knew like I was like, for being a president, I knew I was still starting out at the bottom of the food chain. I still wanted to be treated like a member. I wanted people to treat me like that. And just like, and we saw it each and every week, I was getting better and better and better. But what made it my greatest strength, I was so optimistic about everything. I was so willing to learn from everything. And I think that was the greatest strength of going into, I never saw it failing. Even after the fallout, I was so optimistic about it. Because it was such a, in bringing to the point back of all these unique personalities and individuals, it was so unique and felt so right, and everything was going and turning in such a way, there was just nothing in my mind that was like stopping it from becoming what it could be. There was no chance.
It's interesting you say that, because a lot of times, especially now in our environment, we spend a lot of time where we have this disbelief, or we have there isn't, you know, it's much harder to be an optimist in this, in, you know, 2020, or let's just call it like a COVID era. Like optimism, confidence, intuition, these are all things that kind of get compromised when we are isolated. And you were talking about how your abilities as a leader at that organization was a culmination of your efforts, but also the efforts of a team. Do you have, so when it came to being a leader of this organization, did you ever have any leadership roles in the past beforehand? Like, did you ever, were you ever like the, at the leadership end of anything regarding your early life?
Yeah. The only leadership position I had was I was the captain of my soccer team.
Okay.
Only sports, but no like actual like organization per se.
Okay. Yeah. And so when it came to, so you're talking about, getting kind of your confidence growing with each week and you just believed in this thing working, you know, what really, is there a process that you had that kind of like, what goes into believing in something, like believing in a product or service or an organization? What plays into this level of confidence that everything is going to be okay? Like what set you straight in saying, you know what, like, no matter what, if I stick my head into this and I work as hard as I can, that this thing is not going to fail?
Yeah, the underlying purpose I had, just looking back at it, it was my job as the president was to try to make this thing happen for every single member. And that was me putting everyone, I wanted, my purpose in those 2 years was to make everyone experience like this succession.
Okay.
Like, regardless of my mindset of anything, it was to make everyone else succeed. And I think that's just like the biggest, like, just looking like in hindsight of like how leadership is supposed to be, and everyone has their different leadership styles. Mm-hmm. My greatest strength in like my own leadership was to bring up everyone with me. Mm-hmm. I like to, everyone in that fraternity from our start date to when we got initiated grew in some capacity. And I think that was the, all that emotion like trapped me. I'm just like, wow, everyone came up together. Everyone saw this through, even in the dark times. I mean, if I showed any moment of like, we're not going to do this, like every member would have probably fallen out with me. So mm-hmm. It was my job to, and my purpose per se was to just every single day, bring that positivity, bring that optimistic. Everyone's going to see this succession with me, no matter what.
Sometimes the leader has to be that drummer boy in that very primitive art form of war, where like you go into battle, let's say in a colonial battle, and there are people, there are flag bearers, there are drummers, and then there are people mm-hmm. with the rifles. And sometimes the leader of the battle really wasn't the soldier or the captain, but the drummer, the somebody who is actually setting the pace, setting the tone for the battle, which was, you know, we're going to battle and fight to make this organization happen. Because it really was a fight, because for so long we saw another group on campus, you know, they had been around for 4 years or something and had never chartered on campus. They had never gone through with the actual next level. They never took it to the next step. And in 2 years, mm-hmm. you know, we were able to take something by the beat of your drum and that of the e-boards. We were able to really walk into this battle, be like, you know what, you know, everything's on the line here. Like, we got so many different things at play here, but what we did come out with is, you know, a fully formed chartered campus organization that I think really set the tone and changed the tone on campus. Is the leadership that you and that e-board in that original colony set for the rest of the organization and to this day is, in general, that for our fraternity never really abided by the rules of the rest of the fraternity. Like, we ran in
the
scope of the metaphor. We went by the beat of our own drum. And I think that was reiterated to us by other organizations where they're like, these guys aren't like typical fraternity men, or at least in the sense that, you know, they're not doing everything that the rest of the fraternities are doing on
campus. Everyone had their own personality, and that was the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Everyone had their own.
There was a level of individualism that really led to so much charisma in our group. There were so many people that were able to get impacted on such a personal level. I mean, the amount of friendships that I've seen formed out of this organization are unlike any other. I mean, I think about it in the sense that even in the 2 years, I mean, it's been over a year since we've like on a general basis talked. I mean, it's probably been since since your graduation that I've really had a major conversation with you. And it's just really been well wishes ever since, you know, kind of over Instagram and stuff. But when we're going into, so we were able to battle through a fraternity together. We were able to really kind of understand each other as people and understand each other as leaders. But When it comes to, I want to say, when it comes to being a part of a fraternity, we kind of, it can be hard to fall into the popular trap. Like, we were running by the beat of our own drum, but I think we fell into, there were instances where we started to see people almost like not trust in themselves anymore. And they really started seeing like, oh, well, all these other groups are doing this, so let's just do mm-hmm. that. Like, I think over the course of, you know, you're kind of transition out and kind of in a way a new like generation of students is we watched the fraternity in a sense change a little bit, is that at some point we get frustrated when we're isolated. We are the single variable in mm-hmm. that equation. So when we are by ourselves, a lot of times we start believing in the criticism and the things that at one time were in direct opposition to what we saw as a successful path. And so in the scope of this conversation is, you know, how can we keep ourselves on track when we're by ourselves in this kind of COVID era? I mean, what is something that helps you stay on the path? What helps you kind of, what keeps you motivated to do the thing? Like, what keeps you on track and gives you confidence knowing that, like, I am on my own path and I'm doing the right thing for myself?
It's a tough one, man. Tough one, especially like given what everything's going on in the world, just beyond COVID, just everything. But that's just something that everyone has, from what I've seen, like everyone's got to find their own path and purpose. And my purpose was, you know, I still got my job. I'm healthy. I'm still doing everything that I can to engage in a way, whether it be promoted or just do better in life. At least I just waking up every day with the sense that you're going to be better than the next. And I think that goes a long way with me picking up running. I was never a distance runner until last year, but now I've really picked up the steam with that. Running, at least like knowing with running, you are better than the next, than the yesterday.
Yeah.
And that's beyond fitness and beyond all that. Just making sure you're connecting with individuals, connecting to friends, connecting with people that help you stay on that engaged path. Because even I still don't know that I don't know what the path holds next. I mean, I'm 25 and I still, there's still a lot of like, and I think that's the beauty of it. The beauty of like going back to the fraternity, it just not having a set schedule in your life and not having that set schedule in tone to what you want to do, but letting things flow and letting things happen in a sense. So
that's an interesting point. You're talking about like kind of letting things flow. Like you really in the sense of how you did lead, one aspect of your leadership was, you know, we never really heard you overanalyze or overbear on any one thing. You really let things kind of start and end. And then once you knew that there was kind of a conclusion to whatever was happening, you were able to really kind of assess and analyze and adapt and move forward from any situation. Is there any situation in which your leadership was tested where you said like, this could really make or break kind of my legacy at this fraternity?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest test was, do I want to show up every day and continue? Like, cause there were moments where I thought it could fail, but if I ever showed that to any of the members, it would break everyone. It would break everyone's mindset. And that's from a leader standpoint, the biggest thing about leaders and like what I feel like most leaders need to realize is you set the tone for everyone else's path that's going to like follow you or that respects you. And it was my job, or at least in my mind, what I was going through, I needed to show that I was confident. I needed to show that I was going to show up every day. I showed up in a suit every Sunday. I showed up just continuously showing up, even if, and at that time too, I was going through academic probation. It was just like not letting other emotions and other like factors come in, because things are going to happen negatively. Things are going to happen, but that's the beauty of letting it flow. You have people that pick you up, help you get along the way, and then you can assess and conclude of getting better. And that's what happened each and every week. The biggest test was just showing up every week and making sure that we're still going.
That's really interesting. I like what you said about the leader is somebody that can't show, like they're the ones that are showing up. They're the one that are setting the standard. They're the ones that are there when they don't want to be there, but they're there anyway. And I think honestly, for me, that idea gets a lot easier knowing when there's a team or somebody around to almost hold you accountable. And then you get into a situation like now where, like for me, I think my leadership has grown ever since I started kind of engaging with Instagram more and trying to grow an audience of leaders and individuals that like empowered and enlightened individuals. Mm-hmm. And over the last couple of weeks, this idea of showing up has been very prevalent. And it's something where this is my own kind of side of leadership. This is just in the same way that you're talking about what challenged you is, if there's something that I could relate to, something I could empathize with, is the last 2 or 3 weeks, I've just been in such a bad place. I've been in such a hard place where it's kind of like if the fraternity, let's say in the scope of this metaphor, like the fraternity, like something bad happened, or something great was happening. And then like, let's say half the members just wanted to drop, like they were almost like unionized and they just said like, we don't want to be part of this anymore. And they just drop, you know, just get it out of here. So for me, my level of motivation, when I didn't have a team, when I didn't have anybody holding me accountable, except for like the people that saw me on Instagram posting workouts and stuff, transitioning from one activity one goal to the next has been an extreme struggle for me. And so ultimately this concept of showing up, what I mean to say is I haven't been showing up for the last three or four weeks. And it's come from, you know, the one goal that I shot for 9 months, you know, is gone. And you've had this, you know, you've been working out for a goal that hasn't been canceled yet, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the half marathon or marathon, I'm going to run both of them, but I'm just going to do them on my own terms. Like, I feel like I need to pay.
So we'll get in on that in a little bit. But what I mean to say is, you know, I have a lot of goals too, where you have one side of your life is kind of set, things are going your way when it comes to your career. And it's something for me is I was working on Ironman and training, but also trying to grow my career. And that's kind of an unsteady thing when you're creative. There's different types of jobs that you can have. There are different levels of, in a creative field, there's a multitude of things that you could get into, brand design or art direction, anything like that. So I had this double-sided life where not only was I training and posting and creating content, but I was also trying to grow my career. And then, in the art of showing up at one point, I could feel myself, I had burnt myself out because I had showed up every day, but I had started making compromises on the things that actually helped me show up day to day. And it was just a matter of taking advantage of my mental and physical health. And it was like in this hope that if I just sprinted that I could get to the finish line and, you know, I could finally like rest for a second. And that's kind of the beauty of life is like time does not stop, man. Like, you know, in the 2 years that you were a colony president and in a heartbeat, you know, that was done and you were a member again, you know, you were kind of like just a different chairperson, but you weren't, you know, heading the thing and time moved quickly. And you went from being in Michigan to being in Texas and life just moved so fast. And so in the sense of, you know, just one day alone where you don't show up, it can really compound and life does not stop for you. Life really is just so senselessly just moving forward, relentlessly moving forward. And each day that we choose to like take off is just, it's just time added on to this timeline that you have for yourself. Whatever goal you're trying to reach, every day that you take off is kind of like taking 2 steps back and 1 step forward in a sense. So showing up every day, it's such a, like even a baby step, even if it's something where like, you know, you feel like you're doing nothing at all. Like you feel like you're doing something so menial of a task that, you know, it doesn't matter whatsoever. But I think when your head hits the pillow each night, you'll at least be able to say the one thing I was able to do was this small thing, whether it's just I clean my room or I made my bed, whatever it is. Mm-hmm.
That's all it is, just getting better. Or like picking anything to like you were better than yesterday for.
Yeah.
It's just the mindset you got to go into.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good way to transition towards the thing that really, I think probably unites us the most is endurance sports at this current time. Because when I finally got out of school, I started doing endurance sports and Hunter had probably started endurance sports right around the same time. And so it's just kind of been a back and forth on Instagram of seeing each other's Garmin pictures
I got that from you, man.
I like to, I think there's a level of, I think that's probably one of the best things that actually I ever did when it came to kind of this COVID era is people seeing the workouts that you did in Garmin. Like, shout out to Garmin to really, like, they made a user interface that was really easy to screenshot. Like, you could just post this workout in your story and, like, people knew that you did it. Cause I think Richard, so we have a member that's in our fraternity as well named Richard, and he's kind of started doing the same thing.
Yeah, starting to run in the distance. I've seen those. Yeah.
Yeah. And so endurance sports, man, it's just this ambiguous, like, huge, broad concept. Like, endurance sports, it's just as much about the running as it is the actual, like, the shit behind it. Like, there's so much.
The mental capacity behind it. It's such a unique game. I never, like, even thought of, like, people actually going through these runs. Like, you're just going through any endurance in general. Just, like, what is actually going behind the scenes? It's nuts.
Well, I mean, when I met you, man, you were a lug nut.
I'll take that. Yeah, I was a meathead for sure. Like, I was like,
look, Hunter looked like a linebacker. He looked like Luke Kuechly. He could have, like, subbed in for Luke Kuechly in Hunter's, like, lifting prime. He could have probably gone to the NFL and at least hit somebody and hurt him, because you were a big dude, man. What was your biggest setup?
This was crazy. Keep in mind, I'm 5'10", and this is when I first, like, was obsessed into bodybuilding. But I was eating 6 to 7 meals a day, and I was 225 pounds.
Holy shit.
And now I'm like, I can say I'm at 193 right now.
Yeah, that's the way it should be, my brother.
it's insane. Like, what goes into that is another beast, because it is insanely hard to, like, maintain that.
Well, they're different disciplines, yeah.
Oh, different.
Except, would you rather run or eat food that you don't want to eat?
Damn, yeah, I'd rather run.
I'd rather run. Like, as much as, like, I love food, I can't bring myself to eat a meal that I don't want to eat. That's, like, the worst pain. That's, like, worse than a cold shower.
Yeah, I think with me, with those meals, I never really, like, I didn't care for the taste. I just knew I was getting bigger. That was the goal. Like,
gotta get bigger.
So that was, like, yeah, that was just the underlying for me.
Well, as much as it might be, I don't know if the word's embarrassing, but sometimes it can sound corny to have kind of a unit, like an idol in a sense, or not an idol, but like a role model in this current life. Like, oh, I just watched X person's YouTube videos. Like, I watched Casey Neistat and I wanted to become a blogger or a vlogger, in the sense that we both are actually really into the Bear Performance Nutrition brand. And that's something that kind of unites our concept of endurance sports, is we follow this guy, Nick Bear, and his audience is growing, like, exponentially each day, which is awesome for the brand. It's also sad because, like, we both kind of saw him when his videos were only getting, like, a couple dozen thousand views.
He has just grown. It's
skyrocketed. But
they just got a new warehouse in Austin. Like, I mean, they just keep growing too.
Yeah, I think they went from a couple thousand square foot warehouse to a 5,000 to a 10,000. And I think they're in the 10,000 now. Yeah, they said they had 400% growth year over year this year. Or something like that. Like, imagine if this podcast made no money at all and then made, like, you know, $4,000 by the end of the year.
$400,000.
Yeah, like, what, you know, it's absurd, but, you know, to this point, that guy showed up every day. Like, that is somebody we follow because we know, like, no matter what, this guy is literally, he doesn't stop. It's kind of it's absurd. But what I mean to bring up with this is, Hunter and I think we were probably both incentivized to do these endurance sports because of this man, or in a sense, inspired by this man, because I know for me, I needed to go do something crazy. And I saw this guy online back last year, like around this time, and he was a CrossFit essentially sized athlete, something like you, like 5'10", 200 and something pounds. And he converted himself in 6 months into an Ironman. So he did a full Ironman in 6 months of training or something like that, or four months of training, something
like
that.
It was just crazy time.
Stupid amount of, like, a stupid short amount of time. And so he became an endurance athlete, and now he's really shot himself down to, I think he's like at like 192. But the dude is just like one just lean piece of muscle. And So I mean to give detail on this is because in a way you've transformed your composition just as I have too. I mean, in the course of all this, in the course of endurance sports, I've lost something like, I started at like 170, I think, at my worst. And at my lowest, I did a half marathon one day and I weighed myself afterwards and I was 137. So we both lost a lot of weight, but in terms of what we gained up here in the head and what we gained kind of in our hearts and in our legs is this relentless pursuit of whatever goal we're doing. You know, sometimes we go out in these runs. I don't know if you ever get this, but you're like, I have to get home. No matter what happens.
Always happens towards the end, where I'm like, okay, I need to.
I'm not calling anybody. I got my watch. I don't even have a phone. I can't get anybody out to me. Like, all I got is this run and I have to make it home. So do you see yourself doing endurance sports for a long time? Do you see yourself kind of like stopping after these half marathons? Like what is it to you right now?
Yeah, to me, I mean, I don't see myself stopping. I'm addicted. I love the adrenaline. I just like the mental game behind it too. I mean, I chose, and going to your point when we talked that one time, you chose to do something, and the discipline that shows behind that is just getting up every day, showing up, and continuing to do those workouts. For me, I still do the weightlifting on the side. So I'm still with the Nick Bear and all that. I just can't match his endurance speed because the man is 6 foot and crazy genetics. But I don't see myself stopping. One day I will do an Ironman. I wanted it to be next year, but we'll just see. I know the Ironman is kind of a crazy situation with funding and all that. But then again, if worst comes to worst, I would just do it on my own, comparing to what I'm doing with these half marathons and marathons, just doing them on my own, showing up with a pitcher, winning time. That's really all I need, having that gratification that I did something like this.
Right. Because I never ended up doing that. I part of me wanted to do the half Ironman on my own. But number one, I knew that my parents weren't going to be a good support system for something bad happened. Because Ironman stuff is a little bit different than doing a marathon or half marathon where you're just running.
Swimming, biking.
When you're swimming or you're biking and something happens, let's say I did a trail that was 26 miles out and then 26 miles back for the race. You know, what happens if I had a bad flat or I got hit by a car or something I couldn't do that I couldn't do that to the people. So that was a different circumstance versus if I trained for a marathon, I would have done the marathon. I would have recorded it and done whatever with it. But that's probably the hardest part about Ironman is, you do need to kind of have a good support system in there to make sure you're safe. Mm-hmm. That was my ultimate thing was be safe and don't transfer the virus to anybody. And that meant, I can't do this sustainably. So maybe that's the biggest thing that kind of impacted me was I don't have that closure. And I'm jealous of you because you have kind of that goal, that mindset in your head. And for me, I've kind of had to reinvent that again. And kind of transition from being an Ironman to being a runner. And so I'm addicted to these workouts as well. And I like it more because it's upwards of an hour and a half to 2 hours. Depending on your run of just no phone, no stimulation. It's just the foot in front of the other. And you just get to see the world around you, get to hear the birds chirping.
You listen to music at all in your runs or no? No music?
No, I really love Goggins and the way that he sees running. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, motherfucker, I don't wear headphones. Why would I wear headphones?
Distraction of music.
He's like, it's just you in your head. It's just you in your head. Like, I don't know. For him, he said, why would I ever run with headphones? And I kind of ran in the same question is I like running with music. But it's more of if I'm in a bad place that maybe I get a good song. And that's human psychology. Actually, we get a performance benefit from music later in our workouts because it changes kind of the tempo and the mm-hmm. transmission of knowledge or information to our head. It's actually scientifically proven. There's a podcast, I believe a Rich Roll podcast, that somebody was able to study the benefits of playing music during a workout and its actual legitimate benefit to the workout in playing certain types of music. when doing the workout. So I actually would have really loved to get, like, you wear headphones when you run?
So my Garmin's the Vivo Active. It has all my Spotify on it. And I have Beats. They're just Bluetooth ones. So they don't have no phone whatsoever.
Right, because I do the same thing. I have it on my watch. I have my music on my watch. But I do that for the gym. I don't like being on my phone in the gym. So I bring a little journal that I write in for all the workouts, and then I'll keep like my headphones and my watch going, and then I'll leave my phone in the car. Mm. Workouts, man. Like, if you got your phone in any way, shape, or form near you, I feel like it screws you up just based on like the chance that you might get distracted.
Mm-hmm. Social media is always a killer. I've always used my phones though during the workout, but like I'll always put on Do Not Disturb, and it's just just so I have it there. I've just always had it, but
right. And so I guess maybe something that I'm interested in is I want to get to know a little bit more about what you do. So you are a senior business analyst. Is that what it is at Gartner?
Senior business development specialist. Yeah.
Business development specialist.
Mm-hmm.
What goes into that, man?
Yeah, so it is. I'm trying to sum it up in just a very easy format. I call executives and I try to get them on a market research call with my director to see this Gartner Finance product that I sell, and it's best practice data advisory for them to see all this data from the Gartner portal. And to help them see value in it, to help them purchase this. So in a sense, I'm communicating them, cold calling them, emailing them, speaking with them on the benefit of what they would get seeing this market research call.
So it's like sales?
It is sales, yeah. And there's a ton of like backseat that goes in that. Prospecting, finding accounts. I work specifically within large enterprise, which are companies ranging from 1 billion to 100 billion. And
No problem.
No problem whatsoever. But it's a very, like, it's a fascinating job. I never thought I would, like, looking at the whole situation that I have, never thought I would do something like this.
What's something fascinating about it, man? I mean, like, sales is sales, but what's something that fascinates you about it?
In turn, like, just, I guess, like, the communication part in general of, like, I am directly influencing these companies that have a crazy economic impact on the world, like, especially within large enterprise. I've worked with GM, Home Depot, satellite companies, Raytheon, just companies that range in turn Garmin, and Garmin's actually in my territory, ironically, spoken with their director of FP&A. Like, it's just unbelievable the contacts you actually communicate with, and you directly influence them to either buy a product that in turn will help them be faster, which in a sense is what the product does. The product makes them save time, be more efficient with their processes. It's just crazy, that fact that this is helping them, and from the organizational standpoint.
Yeah, the world is this economy, especially with those larger corporations and companies, the impact that one of those things can have on the overall landscape of our economy is pretty wild. I mean, you look at some of the companies that go out of business in the COVID era, or like a lot of the, you know, they might not be corporations necessarily, or not bigger businesses now, but I mean, we're seeing a lot of the larger retailers start to go into bankruptcy. We're starting to see a lot of the larger, just a lot of larger businesses that didn't have enough cash or just didn't prepare themselves in the way that they should have.
Going digital, isn't that
nice? Everything's going digital. It's a wild circumstance. It's actually, is there a way you see 2021 going? Do you see a major player in 2021? Do you see certain things happening that you think other people aren't seeing kind of in the business world?
Is this in terms of like a sales standpoint, or like
this is in general? I mean, like,
in general, I
think 2020, let's call it across the board, like everybody gets hit with the bat. Who are the people that kind of like get back up and they're going to thrive?
Oh, it's all who goes digital. Every single organization we've seen and worked with that has excelled in 2020 are the digital, like, advanced products. We see companies all the time that, and they're these large enterprise companies, whether they be mid-sized, large enterprise, like massive companies that are just in the Stone Age. They still, it's insane. Just, they are on a 2001 like browser, or just like the way their technology is landscaped, the way they organize teams. it's just not efficient to what 2020. And if you compare this to Salesforce, this is why they're so successful. Salesforce has dominated the digital market space. They know how it runs, and they continuously acquire companies that are going digital, and that just grows to their empire. So it's, we're going to see in 2021, at least from a sales and just world perspective, companies that go digital are going to thrive, because we've seen it with remote work. People are more productive. Some companies can argue that, but the revenue is going to, it's going to streamline into digital formats.
Roger that.
Insane.
Yeah, because if there's one thing that Hunter is really good at is sharing business content on LinkedIn. He's very on the ball when it comes to the companies that are with it and the companies that are not. Like, this guy has a lot of just general place knowledge on from what I'm seeing based off of what he shares. And so I'm interested in the next step. I'm kind of that person that wants to kind of force, like, predicting the future can kind of be a poor skill or poor practice, but in the scope of what we're doing, I mean, look, let's say December 2020 comes around and then January 2021, and businesses are going to kind of want to be like, all right, let's start over. Let's try to make the best of this. But I think there are very few that are equipped to do such a thing. Maybe the question I have is, in your experience thus far, have you been impacted by any of the companies that you've researched and looked into and worked with? Do you see, so you talking about all these companies going digital, like what's the leadership like at a company that's kind of like ahead of the game? Like, is there a difference in the way that they're led versus an older company?
Yeah, it stems from how many years of experience like the leadership has in general. Like, the CFOs and CEOs are younger than older.
Really?
I mean, it's just I feel like it's a generational switch. We're going to see in the next like decade, millennials become these CEOs, these next leaders of organizations. And that is going to be the biggest switch of everything, because I feel like our generation has just undergone such a cultured standpoint. We're very diversified in the way like that we try to like look at the world. And when you put that in a leadership standpoint from the previous generation, it's just a totally different way they run teams, they run organizations, what they stand for. And the biggest thing is younger leadership, younger leadership is just one element of that. We see like other companies that have like leadership that are tenured, and they just know what to do. They know like technology is the roadmap to success, but it's the younger generation stepping into those roles.
It is interesting that the younger people are stepping into the roles, and with that, there's a difference in risk aversion too. There's a difference in risk aversion when it comes to younger people. I mean, like if you were put in charge of a company, you might be more prone to take certain levels of risk versus somebody who has been in the industry for a long time, mm-hmm. kind of has a tried and true strategy, knows when to stay away from a certain deal versus another, based on their experience. A lot of times recently, I think we are seeing now our generation, like technically we're Gen, are we Gen Xers? We're Gen Xers, aren't we?
Do I fit the millennial, or is that still Gen X? Like,
I think millennials are 96, and then Gen X.
I'm not sure. I'm 95.
Yeah, you might be a Gen Xer, and then I think I might be a millennial, but don't quote me on that. Maybe it's flip flop, this is a hard thing for me, because some of my life has been dedicated to seeing different levels of leadership and how they ultimately influence the legacy of our, like, kind of influence a legacy. So, you know, down the road, do you see yourself owning your own business? Do you see yourself growing into the business that you're running into right now? Or do you see yourself, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? 5, 10 mm-hmm. years, whatever it might be. Do you have a goal?
Yeah, it's a good question. Yeah. Yes, the ultimate goal for me and the way I see like my mindset going and just trying to be as optimistic as I can post whatever is going to happen in the world is I do want to own my own business. I don't know what that is per se yet, but I know I have that mindset I want to adopt some of those like leadership roles in my own business. In terms of my career now, I mean, it's always a changing landscape with sales. You see people come and go. I love my job. I love the people I'm around. I've gone through so many ups and downs with the job. And I think that's really taught my foundation. And like, and it just applies to like what I want to see. I just kind of let everything fly. I see myself in Dallas for a couple more years, and then I do want to move to Colorado, or Colorado's a big one, Colorado or maybe Chicago, maybe back to Michigan. But Colorado's definitely up in my...
What draws you to Colorado?
I'm a big nature person, and I know that's cliche, but I mean, it's just the beauty of Dallas is I never expect I was going to live there, and if I never would expect it. I lived in Colorado before, and I, from all the people that I met there the first time I was there, just the way everything's set up, the landscapes, the city in general of Denver, it was a cool place, and it'd be a very unique experience to experience that in your mid-20s. At least in my perspective.
But no, I agree. I agree because I'm in the same place where I'm not tethered to any one place, but I just happen to be kind of nest egging, like really just getting myself straight. And then, you know, it is hard when this is kind of like one of those times where you'll see some companies or people go out and some people kind of like thrive. And I want to be the person that thrives in an environment like this, because this is like the most challenging environment. And if you're able to thrive kind of like in what's going on right now, then like whatever happens in the future is kind of like not easy peasy, but like you've done the hard work.
We've gone through it this year.
Yeah. I mean, like, look, 10 years down the road, you might be starting your own business. And then like, I'm just going to hit you up and be like, hey, I'm moving to Colorado. We're going to hang out. We're going to make a business together.
I'll see you there.
Yeah, I mean, like, I will not quit, because we need leaders to really reiterate to us in this world that, like, we can't quit on the core mission or the core of what we're doing. When we're by ourselves, we can give ourselves an out, but when we have a good team, we can really kind of strive and make things happen that were never thought possible before. What do you think goes into a good team? What do you think helps make a good a team successful?
Surrounding yourself with a team or individuals that continuously lift you up and see you for who you are, in a sense. They are people that lift you up when you're down, praise you when you're being successful. And it's just a two-way street, though. You have to be that same person that helps them when they're down and proceeds on with them when they are being successful. So just having that two-way streak of just identifying those individuals is what's going to become the strongest team, at least in my mindset.
Okay. I ask because it can be hard to assemble teams digitally sometimes.
It's very hard, especially without like the emotional like connection and just the person-on-person contact. It's not there anymore. It's all remote.
So I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, but since you're a nature person, I'm assuming that you probably thrive much better in a physical environment with a physical in-person conversation than you do a digital one.
I feel like it's like, for me, at least, I'm like a hybrid of that. Like, it's half and half, because I've made, honestly, in this quarantine, some of my strongest friendships over remotely video chat compared to like, and then in some in-person, I made some extremely strong friendships as well, but at least from what I've experienced, it's been a 50-50 street here.
That's actually really cool to mention, because as much as it's not like the originally preferred option, if we can really come to terms with our environment, what we're doing right now, I mean, this is an absolutely exceptional time to improve on our digital communication skills, because it's kind of like riding a bike. Like it's a conversation still, but it's a whole different beast. Like even in talking to you over Zoom, I mean, we would have probably had a similar but still different conversation as if I went down to Dallas and had a conversation with you, and you know, it would be a completely different thing. In-person communication can bring out different things in us, and we can perceive, like you said, that level of emotion that a screen cannot. That's why I prefer in-person communication, but the beauty of Zoom is I get to have conversations like this with you or anybody else from the comfort of their home. Everybody's safe. Everybody's there connected. Ultimately, I like this idea of, I think for me, I'm understanding now that leadership now comes down to understanding just the human value of a team, is that everybody has other things going on in their life that I think in general, would you agree that you're seeing a lot of people, maybe even companies, understanding that businesses are just businesses and it's not the end all be all, like before we kind of slaved away at our jobs for 80 whatever hours a week sometimes. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing kind of this revert into a work-life balance. Like people are actually really
like mental health, like awareness, it seems like too, from that work-life balance. Yeah.
There's a lot more emphasis on health, and maybe that's a level of productivity that we're missing out on. Like, since we're more stressed, that there's less productivity, there's a marginal return there. Because, I mean, you're working like, what, 40-hour weeks?
It ranges. Like, I'll get up at 7:30, 8 o'clock, work till like 6 sometimes. But okay. Just like, it goes up and down. We'll say like 40. Yeah.
Yeah. And see, like, I run into a wild schedule where you got something simple like that, but you got a job that, you know, is providing for you what you need. And for me, I'm finding I have a job that provides what I need. But so like from 3 o'clock until 11, I'm working. But when I'm not working, I'm like, when I'm in a good mood, which is hopefully like 75% of the time, like maybe this is a good way to kind of go into this, is because I think every successful person, or at least every person that is on the path towards success, has a level of process. Would you agree? Like somebody has like a process to like kind of create results.
Yes, they have to have a process to get to the end goal that they want.
And so my process has been kind of an iteration and innovation over a year, where number one is for me sleep. Like, how much sleep do you get a night?
About 8 hours. I try to get 8 in.
See, I'm in the same place, and I ask a lot of people about sleep, and the general like average I'm getting is like a lot of people, I think like probably the average is like 6. Oof. Which is wild. Like even those 2 hours make me feel like groggy.
It's a game changer, man.
Yeah. Like when we're not sleeping enough, our brain has not basically detoxified itself. It has not gotten rid of all the stress, like all the cortisol in our brain. It hasn't flushed itself of yesterday's problems potentially. So part of my process is a lot of sleep, and that comes with the territory of Ironman or marathon, is like, you just want to sleep more. And then the other part of the process is this level of consistency. And the consistency for me starts in the morning. Do you do your runs in the morning, or do you do them when you can? Like, what's the general premise with like when you go for a run?
Yeah. For me, just knowing my body, I can't do much physical activity in the morning. I have to fuel my body at least 3 meals, maybe 4, depending on like how many, like my metabolism is crazy. But yeah, about like I have to refuel before my entire like workout splints. So I always do my runs in the evening.
Well, you also got the Texas heat, so probably running in the evening is probably best for you.
Well, not really. If I had to choose, I probably should run in the morning, because it's like that 70, 75 degrees, and then it just spikes to this desert heat.
Right. And so then to continue so we got the running, we got our sleep, we have our running, these are kind of like pillars of our success, really. It's like good sleep. Are you on any specific diet or anything like that?
I mean, I'll eat rice and chicken, whatever, but it's very loose. I don't stick myself to a meal regimen. I just have to get 3 to 4 meals in.
Okay. And then, so we got like our food, we got our run, we got our sleep. And then my process a lot of times is, so when I wake up, I kind of fuel up and energize up, whatever. And then, so I work from, if it's an ideal day, like I'll wake up at 8:15, I'll fuel up and do some morning pages, do some writing and stuff. Then I'll get up, and then I'll basically start my day around 9:30, 10. And then from like 10 until 1 is essentially either I split my time between working out and doing podcasts and creative stuff or whatever. And then between like 2 and 3 is kind of like this grace, like eat food period. And then from 3 until 11, I basically do my second job, which is my first job. And then
what is your second job? Like, what do you actually do? Never got that.
My actual official job title is I'm a page designer at Gannett. The Austin Daily Statesman is a company that I don't know if you've ever heard of that newspaper, but the Austin Statesman is a paper that we work on in Texas. Lubbock, Texas is another one. Our Center for News Design is based in Austin, Texas. And I'm trying to think if there's any other like major Texas newspapers, but I think those are like most of them. But
man, all these are drawing you towards Texas, man.
Well, the company I work for, yeah. So I, that's a thing. So yeah, Yeah, so I've been working remotely for them for over a year now, and so that's like the nice like aspect is I started remote work 6 to 8 months before everybody started remote working.
So you're already used to this, yeah.
Yeah, everything that everybody was going through and all the questions and concerns they had with like company culture and stuff like that, I was saying it, like I just wasn't saying it publicly and I should have, but, and granted, that's why I made my blog, but like I should have been more vocal about how remote work is not this fanciful thing. It's not just this work-life balance utopia. Like there's a lack of work culture when you're not remote working, and that's a give and a take. Like a lot of people at this point may not care, but if you're remote working, like when you're in the office, like you feel like you're like in Gartner, like you got like this company culture
surrounded by you. Yeah.
And then when you're in remote work, just like you said, there's a lack of emotion. Like there's just a lack of culture. There's a lack of
you.
Yeah, connectivity. It's just like, yeah. Oh, we're a part of this thing. Sure. Like, I guess if that's what it is. And like, if you don't receive your like one email of the week, it's like, am I even working here? Or like, am I just doing this thing without being told what to do type of thing, like totally autonomous. So with newspaper building, it's kind of like that where, you know, I don't get a lot of communication. A lot of people that were part of my company before they went remote, they all kind of have some camaraderie versus I'm very much like, I just get in, I get my work done, I get out, which is kind of what I prefer. And I never knew I wanted to prefer that in a company because I've always wanted to invest myself in work culture. But for me, it provides a safety net for the things I really want to do, which is I like creating content for people and I like having conversations with strong, empowered people like this. I like the podcasting the most because it takes me out of that monotonous zone, I guess, if you may. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we only get to have a certain few conversations with people nowadays. So, these are always a highlight of my week, but scheduling them can be hard, which is why I made the link for you. But yeah, so I mean, in the scope of this conversation, I really like to just get a general idea and scope on these people in the world that really are kind of taking on these challenges. They have this ironclad mindset. You know, you're able to go through these big runs, and you know, sometimes we go through like 6 or 7 mile runs and like we're not even breathing heavy. You know, we're so invested in it. And then other people look at us like, what the hell are you made of? You know, and it's like,
oh, dude, I get so much shit sometimes for posting that. I'm like, oh, they're just my close friends. They're like, oh God, here we go. But it's just like, that's just what I'm going to do, man.
Yeah, man. Cause like I post a picture of me like cradling a bottle of protein powder after a half marathon.
Oh, that was like, yes.
And people are just like, okay, you just did a half marathon at like 7 o'clock in the evening. Like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, you just had a whole day and you decided I want to do a half marathon at the end of it. But yeah, I guess maybe the one question I have, it's a question I like to ask a lot of people on the podcast, because at the end of the day, this is called I Will Not Quit. Is there a defining moment in your life where you failed, where something you said like, wow, I really fucked up or I really screwed up? And or if just in general, if there's a moment where you just said like, I failed my core true purpose or mission. And if you did, how did you kind of get past that?
Yeah, man, this is honestly going into this podcast, and this is the most recent one, and I'll share this too, because I'm comfortable talking about it. It just fits the whole, like, just the name of the, I Will Not Quit. So in my career, I was gunning for a business development manager, which is a sense you have your own territory. You have your own calls, which I do with my BDM currently right now. We run calls together. But I interviewed for it. It's been a 2-year journey. We have brought in a lot of revenue together, did everything in my, like at least in my mindset to prepare for it, and running everything that I can with my BDM's different managers. And I was the only one of the class of like 6 people, I believe, that didn't get this job, the new promotion. This happened about beginning of August or the end of August. So these past like 3 weeks have been just a crazy turbulence of like emotions and just, I need to get back on the path in a sense. Like I will not quit. But, and I guess like coming out of it, I think that what I'm taking away from it is just getting back on this path and getting back on to my routine. This is only going to make me stronger in a sense of like, what I can do, what are my abilities, what can I do to reassess the situation and just keep moving forward.
Yeah, because it takes a lot of self-awareness to get through a failure like that, to get through a rejection or a failure. Or,
and there was just like, with that failure too, was just so all the emotion encapsulated within 2 years. And then just, I think what added to that emotional aspect was what's going on in the world too.
Right.
COVID.
Well, it's very fragile emotionally. It's just fragile. Like if one bad thing happens, then it's like, oh, well, all the dominoes are falling.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, that's just like what it came down to. And, you know, I have such a good team surrounded by me, like looking at everything now, obviously still like it sometimes still hurts talking about it, but I think it like definitely has helped my mind and like kind of be at ease with like, I did everything possible I can. I felt like I got rejected, but in the long term of everything, I'm still at a great place. I still have all my team surrounded me.
You're 25.
Yeah, well, I'm still young. Sometimes I feel like, damn, I'm close to 30, but but I have put everything now in the mindset of I've connected with people I need to connect with, and hopefully in the next 2 or 3 months, I will have that next opportunity to have that gratification of I will like get the job now, at least from my perspective.
I like your confidence. I like your overall, it's not a cocky level of confidence. This is like, you know, I know what my abilities are. I objectively, without anybody else telling me, like, I know exactly what I can do and I know that I can accomplish these things and it doesn't overwhelm me. It doesn't put me in a bad place. Like these things that I want to accomplish, I know I can accomplish them. And it's just a matter of like showing up every day. It's a matter of, you're talking about like, I need to just get back on the path. Like, is the running the thing that gets you back on the path? Is there something that, besides that gets you like back on this path that you're looking for?
It's the mental like battle that you kind of play in your head out. Like with remote work, there was so much in my mindset. Like, I just moved into the new place. I'm going to get this new job. And just, this is going to be the turning point of 2020. And yeah. When that halted, it was just these past 2 weeks have been this mental battle of, did I just fail? It was really hard for me to tell like my like friends, my family that I just felt so disappointed in myself. It wasn't a sad or anger. I feel like the old Hunter would have gotten angry about that. But, you know, it was just more of just, it was just a self-disappointment. I put so much like of a rebound and resurgence in like my work and the way I like communicate with others. And to me, at least, like I did all that and it didn't work out in my favor. But from what I'm learning from this whole like experience, it's how can you respond to something like that? How do you respond to failure? And I think this is a good lesson for me. And you have to take it as a learning lesson, even as cliche as it sounds, like taking this as a lesson moving forward and continuously going back to presenting your goals. You're going to get through this. And what are the next steps to get through this? In a sense, laying it before you.
The beauty of going through a failure, like the one that you've just gone through, is that you're reminded that we all fail. Like whether it's every day on a minute task or it's weekly, like we fail at something on a mass scale all the time. We fail, whether it's ourselves or our family or whatever. Like failure is such a constant aspect of life. And the more that we can accept that it is, the faster we can get past each one of them. We can learn from them. And you know, with you, you are somebody who's just like, I know you'll take anything on the chin and keep moving forward. And that's something I've always respected about you, because that's ultimately how you created teams. It's like, like you're saying, you showed up and you never let anybody know if you're having a bad day or not. It's like, you're just that person who like set the tone. And I think that's what people can learn, is like when you can learn to be the person that sets the tone, you know, you help a group become stronger as a whole.
And like, I'm not perfect with that, like by any means, and no one will ever will. Like there are days where like you're going to show emotion and I show emotion completely and I just almost lose it. But I mean, for the most part, it's always just trying to keep yourself at this constant like level of just showing up, staying, creating your own tone for others, and just helping when you like go out of your way, help, like having others like reach out to you and help you. So.
Yeah. I think we maybe, one thing that 2020, maybe even before 2020, but in general, is we gotta, it's incumbent upon us to ask for help, because we can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you were part of an e-board of a fraternity. I mean, the president is more of just this delegate. It's this person who's able to unite the powers that be, you know, in that group. You were just this person that was assembling people and kind of conducting the ensemble. You know, you're just kind of the person that just set the tone, and everybody else actually did all the walking in a way.
It's an interesting premise too. Yeah. When creating that e-board, it almost felt like, and that's where like I really started asking for help, and it almost felt embarrassing asking for help, which is like, I feel like a lot of people like experience when you're like, you're supposed to be this high level figure, or you expect yourself to be this all knowing being in a sense, but you got to ask for help. And yeah, that's kind of like what I did.
It's the most, it's maybe the word for me when I ask for help is frustrating. I don't know if that comes to mind for you. Like it does.
Like you feel like you didn't, there's just some type of like negative feeling with that, or negative perception of that, asking for help.
You feel that's like also that empowers it. Sorry, you were saying something.
You just feel like below the curve in a sense. Like you should have figured out for yourself or something like that.
Yeah. And with people asking, when you can ask other people for help, that actually is the thing that helps engage other people. It draws people in. It's like, I have a sense of purpose. Like there's a reason I'm here, and it's to help these other people. Like the more that we help each other out, the more we're actually creating this stronger bond. We're creating this stronger team because we know what our strengths are and we know what our weaknesses are. Cause I could outsource, you know, a bunch of things for my business or whatever, like whatever I want to call right now, but I could outsource a bunch of things. I could ask my one friend like, hey, I'll pay you whatever X dollars and you edit these videos or whatever. But I think maybe the entrepreneur in me always wants to manhandle everything that's kind of going on because it's my own story, my own vision. But the more we ask for help, the more that we accept that we aren't the best at this one thing and that there are people that are, that's going to really lead to, I think, it's going to just lead to a lot more opportunities for you.
It leads to more success, opportunities. And the most important thing, it leads to, at least from my experience, and I'm sure like other people can relate to it, it opens the relationships between like those individuals that ask for it. Opens individuals with the people that helped you, you get closer. It shows transparency. There's something good that comes out of that.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I'm really glad that we could talk again. And I'm just like, I'm scratching my head because I feel like there's something more that we could talk about, but maybe in the sense that maybe that's a reason for me to, when things are a little bit more cleared up or whatever, is like, I just need to make a trip down with some podcast gear and do another one of these, because it's like, it's always good hearing your side of things. Cause the thing that I get from Hunter the most whenever I'm with him in person is like this level of like, I don't know why the word came in my head just now, but like tenacious calm. Like you are so calm in the moment, but like when you're in something, like you're in the thick of it, it's like, don't fuck with Hunter. Just do the thing that he thinks is best, because ultimately we're probably going to get to where we need to go. I mean, you're one of those people that's like a pure raw force. There's nothing held back when it comes to your personality or work ethic. You know, Hunter, I'm sorry if I left anything out. Is there anything else that you wanted to say to kind of the viewers today? Something that you...
No, man, this was a crazy, cool experience. This is my first podcast, so I hope it went as well as it could, but hopefully limited the ums. But I just think, yeah, it's a cool... This was a very cool experience. I'd love to do it again. And yeah, you need to make a trip down here.
Yeah, man. I think that's probably on my list of things to do, because ultimately I do want to cut ties probably with Michigan in the near future, but it's just about company. But maybe I need to just make the trip out there and just spend a day or two in Tejas and see how it is. But I'll bring the podcast equipment along with me. We'll get a more in-depth conversation. But I just really want to thank you for your time, man, because you're a busy dude. So I really appreciate you coming on here. You did a fantastic job. And I think the people that are here are really going to learn a lot from what you have to say. And I just appreciate your being here. And it's been a while. It's been a year or so since we talked, but I hope it's a shorter amount of time until the next conversation.
Me too, man. It's been great.
All right, Hunter. Well, for everybody out here, this is episode 5 of I Will Not Quit. I am your host, Connor Byrne.